Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, May 5th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gandhi.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The MDCT says the government's plan to import more than 700,000 tons of maize to feed the nation proves ZANU-PF's land reforms have failed.
It is actually shocking that a country that used to be the breadbasket of not only the Southern African region, but of the whole of Africa, is now forced to import to feed its population.
The strike by nurses boycotting night duty continues, with patients feeling the pinch as hospitals put a freeze on new admissions.
And Transform Zimbabwe Opposition Party wants President Robert Mugabe to use his powers to declare June 10th as a public holiday to allow workers to participate in forthcoming by-elections.
Our concern arises from the fact that the majority of our supporters are working class, and their right to vote is jeopardized by the holding of the polls on a working day.
The opposition MDC of former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai says the announcement by the government yesterday that Harare will import over 700,000 tons of maize to feed the nation shows that the ZANU-PF land reform program was never genuine, nor about redressing past colonial imbalances, but, quote, a shameful vote-buying patronage jamboree meant to prop up the regime's waning fortunes. The government yesterday said the country had a massive grain deficit this year due to a lack of rains and needs to import at least 700,000 tons of maize to avert food shortages. But the MDCT spokesman Obet Gutu says this shows the land reforms have failed, adding current land reinvasions and vandalism now targeting former ZANU-PF stalwarts like Didmus Mutasa shows the program was political.
This is a clear manifestation of the failure of the so-called land reform program by the ZANU-PF regime. It is actually shocking that a country that used to be the breadbasket of not only the Southern African region, but of the whole of Africa, is now forced to import 700 tons of maize to feed its population, a short 15 years after embarking on a disastrous, violent, and ruinous so-called land reform program. This simply shows that the bulk of the people who were given land are not people who are capable of farming. Land should have been given to those people who are ready, willing, and capable of farming, and not to the ZANU-PF chefs and other politically well-connected people. As the MDC, we say that this decision to import 700 tons of maize is a very blatant example of the resounding failure of the land reform exercise that was violently and illegally undertaken by the Robert Mugabe regime.
We see that the land occupations continue in some areas in the country. What is the view of your party regarding the continuing land invasions or land redistribution program?
It also shows and indeed proves that the land reform program was never meant to benefit the ordinary Zimbabwean who is in need of land. It was primarily aimed at benefiting the ZANU-PF chefs. As we can see now, they are invading Didmus Mutasa's farm. They are also invading Themba Mliswa's farm. But we all know that both Didmus Mutasa and Themba Mliswa are black people who are entitled to own land. So the mere fact that ZANU-PF thugs have invaded the farms that were allocated to these two gentlemen is a clear manifestation that land has over the years been used by ZANU-PF as a tool for political patronage and never as a tool to properly and sustainably empower the previously disadvantaged black majority.
On a separate issue altogether, there are press reports this week and today in particular saying the donor community is urging the MDCT leader Morgan Tsvangirai to join hands with fired Mrs. Mujuru to form a political party if they want you, or if you want to continue to have their support. Can you just comment on that? What do you know about this?
Let me just start by emphasizing the fact that the MDC is a social democratic and the pan-Africanist local political party here in Zimbabwe. We have an agenda that is strictly local. We have an agenda that is strictly patriotic. We are not a donor-driven party. We are not aware of any moves to say that we should join with Joyce Mujuru in order to receive donor funding. And at any rate, our agenda is not donor-driven. We believe that whoever is peddling those reports is somebody who is bent, obviously, on spreading alarm and despondency. The MDC uses its own membership to raise funds. The MDC also relies on funding from the Political Finance Act that comes from the Treasury here in Zimbabwe. And we are not going to be controlled by donors. We are a party that is independent. And whatever Joyce Mujuru and her supporters are up to, it is their own business. We are a separate and distinct independent political party.
That was MDCT spokesman Obet Gutu on the line from Lilongwe in Malawi.
The opposition Transform Zimbabwe Party says it is planning to approach the Constitutional Court to compel President Robert Mugabe to declare June 10 a public holiday to allow workers to participate in the forthcoming by-elections. Transform Zimbabwe Secretary for Communications Sungai Mazando says the party has written to the president, giving him 7 days to respond, but no response has been received from Munumutapa building. The 7 days expired yesterday. Another opposition party, the National Constitutional Assembly, or NCA, says the president may have a hidden motive in picking a working day for the vote. 8 political parties and independent candidates are expected to participate in the by-elections to fill vacant seats left after the expulsion of MDC renewal team members from parliament. The MDC formations are not participating in the by-elections. 2 more seats fell vacant when ZANU-PF expelled its former administrator Didmus Mutasa and Wurungwe West lawmaker Temba Muliswa, while Wedza North fell vacant following the death early this year of ZANU-PF MP Simon Musanu. Mazando tells Studio 7 Transform Zimbabwe is also planning to approach ZEC over their campaign posters that are being vandalized by suspected ZANU-PF supporters, especially in Harare.
As a party, we're concerned that the by-elections have been scheduled for Wednesday, which is ordinarily a working day. And our concern arises from the fact that the majority of our supporters are working class, and their right to vote is jeopardized by the holding of the polls on a working day. This is especially poignant in view of the fact that the bulk of the by-elections are being held in urban constituencies. And it is a common cause that workers leave homes before 7 a.m. if they are to get to work by 8 a.m. And if they knock off at 5, they can hardly make it back home because of the transport rules that we're all aware of. So they may not make it before 7 o'clock, which is the closure of the polling day. So it wasn't clear whether the president will declare Wednesday, 10 June 2015, a public holiday to enable citizens to exercise their constitutional right to vote in the by-elections. So we wrote that letter for the president to clarify the matter. And in our letter, we've indicated that we would have appreciated a response within 7 days, of which that 7 days has lapsed and we haven't gotten any response. So we are intending to take that matter up with our constitutional court, and we are getting help from the Zimbabwe Lawyer for Human Rights.
Some independent candidates are complaining of harassment by some ZANU-PF members. Are you also facing the same problems?
Of course. I'm sure you should note that ZANU-PF is a party that uses violence to win elections. Actually, on Thursday, 30 April 2015, our activists were actually attacked by ZANU-PF thugs. They were pelted with stones and sticks. We reported this matter to Glenview Police Station, and of course, they said they would be investigating the incident.
That was Transform Zimbabwe Secretary for Communications Sungai Mazando in Harare with Studio 7.
Nurses continued boycotting night duties today, crippling service delivery in major referral hospitals, which include Parire Nyatwa, Harare, and Chitungwiza Central Hospitals. Nurses stopped reporting for duty Monday last week, demanding a review of their allowances from $3.50 allowances per day. Zimbabwe Nurses Association President Regina Smith, who is also a part-time board member of the Health Services Board, told Studio 7 the association is still engaged in negotiations with the government to resolve the issue. The government says it has since launched a probe into allegations of abuse of funds meant for nurses by senior officials in the Ministry of Health and has suspended further payments.
Schools in Zimbabwe opened today with students and teachers bemoaning the worsening state of the economy, which they said continues to negatively affect the education sector. Parents say they are struggling to raise school fees while teachers want the government to improve their salaries and working conditions. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke earlier with Judith Chiangwa of Girls Lagos, who explains that the education sector is being affected by financial constraints.
We don't have the parents having a source of income, a constant source of income where they're able to afford to send their people to school. What this then does, especially to the girl child, is that if there's no money that is going to be found for her to go to school, there's nothing else that she's able to do, especially when she's home. So one of the things that most of the families are now forcing their children to be married, and child marriages are on the increase because that's another form of income. They have to come up from the less privileged families so that they're able to afford no basic food, basic living, because they are not able to afford it at all. You also realize with the boys especially, there's a high increase of drug abuse because there's nothing else to do.
Realistically, in your view, what can be done to make sure that at this level, our young schoolers are able to at least have an adequate education in Zimbabwe?
Your question, I would respond it from a very broader perspective. Where we are looking at Zimbabwe as a country with so many resources, it is a country that is able to sustain itself if the resources are managed well. I know right now there's a lot of talk about minerals, diamonds, a lot of mines coming up. There's a lot of expatriates owning or part owning some of the mines. The question, therefore, that comes is then to say, why is it that government is not focusing on the exploitation of its own resources so that it feeds back to its own people?
That was Judith Chiangwa of Girls Lagos on the line in Harare.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
Africa no longer a development challenge but a development opportunity.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has wrapped up a visit to Wharton, Somalia, that included talks with the country's president and prime minister. Kerry traveled today from Nairobi to Mogadishu, becoming the first sitting U.S. Secretary of State to visit Somalia. He spent about 3.5 hours in Mogadishu, a visit that was not publicly announced by U.S. officials in advance.
The Islamic State militant group is claiming responsibility for Sunday's attack on a convention center outside Dallas, Texas, where a contest for cartoons depicting Islam's prophet Muhammad was taking place.
Burundi's Constitutional Court has cleared President Pierre Nkurunziza to run for a controversial third term. The court said today the president could run again without violating the constitution, saying renewal of the presidential term through direct universal suffrage is permitted.
You are listening to Studio 7 coming to you live from the Voice of America in Washington, D.C.
The Economic Commission for Africa, the United Nations arm promoting Africa's economic and social development, says the continent should rise and take its rightful place in global affairs. ECA Executive Secretary Dr. Carlos Lopez tells Studio 7 Sandra Nyaira that with the upcoming Global Development Summit and the Financing for Development Conference in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, Africa has the chance to push its developmental agenda as leaders meet to discuss the post-millennium development goals and come up with a developmental plan for the next 15 years.
We are very busy with the Financing for Development Conference because it's a great opportunity for Africa. You know, in all this architecture of replacing the goals that we used to have for another set of goals that will be called Sustainable Development Goals, etc., that's very theoretical. At the end of the day, what people really want is to know whether there will be different means of implementation for these different ideas. That means money. And we are going to have that big conference, and Africans are now in a position that is very different from 15 years ago. We are no longer a development challenge. We are a development opportunity. That makes a hell of a difference.
Why is this event important to Africa's development?
It's because it's going to take place in Africa. It's a global event, but it's going to be in Addis. So we are really working on that one as our number one priority for the year. Otherwise, as you know, we have negotiations that are going on all the time on trade, on climate change, and all these issues. But what really counts is not for the Africans just to tag themselves along all these different agendas, but rather to have their own. And their own is Agenda 2063, the vision. And now we need a planning mechanism for the first 10 years. And that is going also to be elaborated during this year. So those are the two big ticket items. Mm-hmm. It's going to gather world leaders, and I think it's going to be a gathering of thousands and thousands of people. Mm-hmm. It's a huge negotiation because we are negotiating for 15 years.
Mm-hmm. So how do you see this panning out? Because already there were differences in terms of how the MDGs are being implemented. People in Africa, some didn't achieve them, most didn't achieve the MDGs, and now we are going towards the next 15 years. What are you envisaging?
Well, on the MDGs were partial. These ones are more comprehensive. So whatever was there in the MDGs finds its way in the new set. And I think Africans have not scored that badly. Obviously, justice has not been made to the efforts that Africans have employed, because we define a finishing line to say everybody has to arrive at this finishing line. But we didn't decide where it was the starting line. So countries that have 8% of poverty are going to reduce by half. That's the target. Of course, it's 4% effort. But if you have 80% of your population on poverty, it's a 40% effort. So it's not the same. So it was a bit unfair with the Africans because they were behind and they were being measured against everybody else. That's why I think the MDGs need now corrections. And these corrections have been introduced in this new set of goals.
Looking at issues of Africa's development, other areas have been hit hard by terrorism, and you look at other issues of good governance in other areas and countries like Zimbabwe, for example. How is that affecting Africa's developmental agenda as a whole?
You see, African countries themselves created something they call the African Peer Review Mechanism. That is basically Africans judging Africans. Governments have to submit themselves to assessment, and then they have a report that says what is not going well. 16 countries have done the exercise. And what comes out as the number one problem in the continent in terms of governance is the way we manage diversity. So we are very bad at managing diversity. So all countries seem to be faulty in this particular score. And I think that explains the resurgence of instability here and there, because there are parts of the country that are not fully integrated, then, you know, it pops up in the form of a conflict.
Mm. Looking at the issue of women, we know that the African Union has declared 2015 the year of the woman. What is the Economic Commission for Africa doing in terms of trying to make sure that the ordinary woman on the ground is uplifted and empowered to make sure that she makes her own contribution towards Africa's development?
Well, one of the contributions that we'll make is to launch this year Africa Social Development Index that gives a lot of weight to the contribution of women. And it's something that is not normally measured. So we are very proud of this development. It's a technical input, An institution like ECA has to put at the table the best possible analysis so the activists can run with it and can make sure that they have good data to make the case. So we are discovering a number of things as we prepare this index. Otherwise, we have our normal gender programs, but this year we are also very keen on linking the issue of agriculture with the issue of gender, because you know the majority of the population in Africa continues to be dependent on the primary sector, and most of these activities really carried out by women, and they don't get enough recognition first and enough possibilities second. So we want really to work on these issues with much better data than the one that is available that is a bit generic.
That was Executive Secretary Carlos Lopez of the Economic Commission for Africa in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
Information, Communication Technology and Courier Services Minister Supamandi Wanzira has tweeted that he has just completed what he said was a very productive meeting with the Vimpelcom, owners of Telecel Zimbabwe, which could avert the closure of Telecel Zimbabwe's operations over its failure to pay outstanding license fees amounting to over $137 million. Mandi Wanzira said from the meeting it appeared Telecel's future in Zimbabwe is, quote, very bright. Studio 7 reached Mr. Mandi Wanzira, but he was unable to provide more details since he was in a meeting. But in the Twitter post, he said Telecel Zimbabwe had its license cancelled in 2007 and appealed to the minister for leniency and was allowed to operate for another 6 years. Today's meeting was meant to iron out their differences with the government over the local entity's non-compliance with the country's indigenization laws and license fees. Potras had cancelled Telecel Zimbabwe's license in a move that would have affected over 2 million subscribers and 1,000 employees.
And now, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The other shoe is now dropped in Burundi, where supporters of President Pierre Nkurunziza have disregarded the Arusha Agreement's provision on presidential term limits and nominated him for re-election. The agreement, the peace deal that ended Burundi's long civil war, has been the basis of the country's peace and stability for the past decade. Protests in the capital Bujumbura flared into violence after the ruling National Council for the Defense of Democracy, Forces for the Defense of Democracy Party, chose Nkurunziza as their presidential candidate for the June 26 balloting. Police and protesters clashed around the city, and authorities used water cannon, tear gas, and small arms fire to break up the crowds. At least two demonstrators were confirmed killed, others injured, and about 200 arrested, including several prominent civil society and human rights leaders. The government shut down all independent radio stations. Over 20,000 Burundians have fled to neighboring Rwanda, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and Tanzania in recent weeks to escape intimidation and violence. The United States deeply regrets the CNDD-FDD's choice to ignore the term limit provisions of the Arusha Agreement and renominate President Nkurunziza. With this decision, Burundi is losing an historic opportunity to strengthen its democracy by establishing a tradition of peaceful, democratic transition. The United States calls on all parties in Burundi to avoid actions such as hate speech that could provoke further violence. We continue to support the Burundian people's peaceful pursuit of their democratic rights and freedoms. We regret the significant missed opportunity, but the hard work of building democratic practices and institutions must continue. In that spirit, we urge all parties to participate in the legislative and national elections and ensure these electoral processes are inclusive, transparent, credible, free, and conducted in an environment without intimidation or violence. We specifically call on the Burundian government to respect the rights of all peaceful political parties and their candidates to campaign, hold meetings and rallies, and express their views. We also call on the Burundian government to respect the right of the media to report freely on the electoral process and campaigns. All parties must abide by the nonviolence charter signed March 9th and refrain from any violent acts, including hate speech or other provocations, that could feed the climate of fear and instability. We commend the neighboring countries for their efforts to receive the over 20,000 Burundians who have fled the country and encourage their continued coordination with UNHCR to provide asylum to those fleeing political violence. The United States will continue to monitor the situation in Burundi closely and take targeted measures to hold accountable those individuals who participate in, plan, or order violence against the civilian population. Violence has no place in democratic elections.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will discuss with experts and you, the listeners, about the new Premier Soccer season.
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios. But I think the discussion, Chris, should be about the youth connection.
Youth connection, yes. Apologies, listeners. Stay tuned for Studio 7 Youth Connection, and we are going to be talking about schools opening and related issues.
Zimbabwean education, I feel like, is too prescriptive. When you go to school, you have all kinds of theory. You receive the education, but then we tend to lag in as far as resources are concerned. For example, if you are doing computer science, you might really know all the theory and all the information.
Yeah, there's a difference between American education and Zimbabwean education in that, for example, if you are going to the third year, you'd be expected to be attached somewhere. But the problem is, a lot of industries, they have closed.
Don't miss this interview tomorrow in our diaspora section here on Studio 7, when we'll be talking to Atina Wedu, Mupiwa's parents, who struggled to raise money for his school fees due to poverty. But a scholarship to study in USA changed his life forever as jobs offers with top international companies are flying in. In stark contrast, some students in Zimbabwe, like Dumisani Muyambo, Muchirin Zise, say they cannot raise money to buy even a pen.
Now to recap today's top stories.
The MDCT says the government's plan to import more than 700,000 tons of maize to feed the nation proves ZANU-PF's land reforms have failed.
The strike by nurses boycotting night duty continues with patients feeling the pinch as hospitals put a freeze on new admissions.
And Transform Zimbabwe opposition party wants President Robert Mugabe to use his powers to declare June 10th a public holiday to allow workers to participate in the forthcoming by-elections.
That's all we had for you tonight. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Chris Gande in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri, leaving you with Standekile Mhlanga.